and this is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Thank you for your company. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour on the program, and another week of crisis in our juvenile detention centre here in Western Australia. This week, six young people aged between 12 and 17 climbed onto the roof of the Banksia Hill Detention Centre. As a result, some of those kids have been moved to the notorious Unit 18, which sits inside the maximum security Casuarina Adult Prison. What do we know about what happened? Well, joining me shortly on the program will be Megan Cracker, who is the director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. I'll be talking to Megan about the incidents and what needs to be done for these young people. Sophie Stewart will also join us. Sophie is the CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. And there's been so many calls over recent years to close Unit 18. The government is going to build a replacement, but it's not going to be ready for another 3 years. We are at crisis point now. We can't wait another 3 years. Unit 18 is simply not appropriate at all to house children in a maximum security adult prison. So looking forward to chatting with my guests today, Megan Cracker and Sophie Stewart. Let's kick off the program right now, though, with Books Kid and a song called Sentimental Dream.
And make-believe dreams, it's not what you're seeing. Don't wanna let you down, don't wanna see you go, don't wanna leave it, I wanna be there. Sentimental things and make-believe dreams, it's not what you're hearing. You can't let me down, let me down, let me down. But you're gonna let us down. And it's hard to find some peace of mind. And it's hard to find some peace of mind. Sentimental things and make-believe dreams is not what you're seeing. Things and make-believe dreams, it's not what you're feeling. You can let me down, let me down, let me down. You're not the one we've come to find, you're gonna let us down. And we're not to blame, we're just the same, but you're gonna let us down. And it's hard to find some peace of mind. And it's hard to find some peace of mind. Don't you say it's not my fault. Don't you say it's not my fault.
Yeah, that's a fella by the name of Books Kid and Sentimental Dream. Here on the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Been on air for 15 years, which is pretty amazing. And shout out to our listeners listening through Kununurra and the regions through Warringarri Media. Our mates up in Derby at 6DBY Radio and nationally through the National Indigenous Radio Service. And of course, everyone listening through Boorloo here in Perth, where the Noongar Radio Studio are located in the old Aboriginal Advancement Council building. So a lot of history to this place there really is, including for the Aboriginal Legal Service, who had its very early days going back to the 60s when it was actually the New Era Aboriginal Fellowship that started it all off. Jodie Hoffman with you this hour. As I mentioned, we're going to focus this program on the crisis situation for our young people here in WA. More crisis over the last week. Six young people aged between just 12 and 17 on the roof of the Banksia Hill Detention Centre. This is a complex issue and it needs urgent attention. And to have a yarn with us on the program today, I welcome Megan Cracker, who is the Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Megan, thanks for your time on Law Matters. How are you going?
Good morning, Jodie, and good morning, listeners. How are you all?
Let's start off by letting people know who you are, where you're from, and what the recovery project actually is.
Not a problem. Thank you, Jodie, for the question. So where I'm from is a place called Mount Barker. It's about 30 minutes from Albany. Big family, so it's Menang country. I'm the youngest of 13 children. Strong mum and dad, rest in peace. I head up the National Suicide Prevention Trauma Recovery Project, and we've provided supports to thousands of people right across the country around a whole raft of issues, whether it be suicidality, incarceration, child removals, so many other things. But basically we support people that fall below the poverty line. As you know, right across the country, 40% of our people fall below the Henderson poverty line. In Western Australia it's 60%, up in the Northern Territory it's 80%. So we provide that support in terms of radical empathy, radical transformation to those that are seeking some kind of assistance. It's a very bleak area. We also run a lot of campaigns in relation to Banksia Hill, class actions that have now generated as a result, and that's been really quite powerful. And I guess the main thing for us is raising the voices of the lived experiences. That's really quite important, because right across the country and in Western Australia, of course, we hear from too many that speak about us without us. And our thing is to ensure that those that are impacted are speaking for themselves, and also having a participant, a powerful conversation in relation to some of the harms, some of the human rights breaches, violations that have been inflicted upon them are being heard and validated. And you know, that's just how we are. It's about providing that love, support, respect, but also ensuring that their voices are raised at the highest level to contribute to positive ways forward, because people need to understand that there are deficits. Too many agencies, organisations want to talk about all the positive things, but when we start looking at the closing the gap strategies for the last 20, 30 odd years, it has not reduced. Whether it be incarceration, whether it be suicides, whether it be child removals, some of those are along the worst in the world when we actually start disaggregating. So in terms of child removals back in 1997, at the time of the Bingham and Mahone report, there were 2,000 black kids in care. The Prime Minister of the day back in 2008 made the apology to the Solan generation. There were 8,000 kids in care, and today we've got about 24,000 black kids in care. And in terms of suicidality or suicides, it's gone from 1 in 23 right across the country to 1 in 16 wow. people taking their lives. So that means that that's the leading cause of death for our people under the age of 44. And incarceration, of course, is about 132 carceral estates right across the country. Of that, there's 17 youth detention centres. That means that there's a cohort of about 42,000 people right across the country that are incarcerated. And a lot of this is just unjustifiable, and a lot of it relates to poverty. When we're thinking about poverty, we think about housing crisis. So, for example, in Western Australia, there's about 20,000 people on the wait list for housing, equating to about 50,000 people homeless or houseless. And that should not be acceptable in this day and age, particularly when we're the 12th richest economy in the world. And in terms of Western Australia, we're operating on a $6 billion surplus, so there is no reason why people should be living on the streets, not having housing. And this is a fundamental basic human rights. But what I'm seeing, and you see the experiential where people are being failed in the sense of 10 years on a priority wait list for a house. 10 years. Mm. So the cycle is just continue to be perpetuated by the lack of political will, and sometimes it's political blindness. They know that it's there, but they choose not to see. And that's why we run all these campaigns to ensure that those that are being impacted in terms of various areas and so forth, they are given the attention that they deserve. And we have to make noise, and we will call people out and just hold people to account, because there is a better way of doing things. At the end of the day, it's about human life and respecting those that have lost somebody and ensuring that there's accountability, but also those that are living are living good lives, particularly in this cost of living crisis.
My guest is Megan Cracker, Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Shameful statistics that you've just reeled off there, Megan. And when we look at Western Australia, the government should hang their heads in shame at the number of deaths in custody that have occurred. Mm. Nationally, over 600 since the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody back in 1991. A very large proportion here on our own doorstep. And one of the most horrific things, not that every death in custody isn't horrific and a absolute tragedy, but losing a young person, a child, as we did with Master Dodd, 16-year-old child, first juvenile death in custody in this state. Absolutely horrific.
Oh, it's terrible. It's catastrophic. But, you know, there was something of that magnitude waiting to happen because there wasn't the political will to fix and address. Like, you talk about the Royal Commission into Aboriginal Deaths in Custody, and thank you for mentioning that. But one of those recommendations was the establishment of the Aboriginal Visitor Scheme. But the Aboriginal Visitor Scheme, they operate during the day, but not at night time. There's a lot of challenges in relation to it. There's good people, good souls that are doing their best, but they clearly don't have the remit. But in terms of Cleveland, rest in peace, he passed away in the middle, you know, very late. And it was just so sad, so wrong. And the great work of the Aboriginal Legal Service in relation to the challenges with the Supreme Court of the confinement orders, that was outstanding. And what we've seen throughout the coronial inquest is that there were serious breaches of that. And this all came to light. But in terms of Mum Nadine, she's an incredible lady. In terms of Wayne, the father one, he's a really lovely person. The mum of Wayne, Auntie Gwenda Mippy, they're all incredible people, you know, but they were failed, and this young person was failed, and he's no longer here. The catastrophic trauma and the grief, it continues. In terms of the West Australian government, they didn't want to admit the responsibility. They did not want to admit it. But here's this young person no longer here because of their inaction, and that's the truth of it. So running a relentless media campaign, trying to shift the public consciousness to say, no, you fellas wronged. You did not provide that support. And it was very simple. The little fella, he only asked for water. He asked to see Aboriginal people. That was denied to him on that horrible, horrible night. But in terms of the way that he was failed, shameful. Yeah. Absolutely shameful. And I remember when it first happened, I was up at King's Park, and then my colleague Jerry, he calls me, and then shortly thereafter we made contact with the mum and went to the hospital, spoke to the dad who was incarcerated at the time outside the hospital. Then I waited for the mum to come down from Kalgoorlie, spoke to her. Auntie Glenda Mippy spoke to her. There were so many flights coming from Laverton, Kalgoorlie, Meekatharra, just to get the families down to see the young fellow. But it was just, it's horrible. And being there with the family every single day and supporting and loving and trying to push through some of the barriers, knowing that he's never going to come back through the West Australian government's fault. And I blame them. I blame them for that. And I blame them because they knew that this was already a challenging situation out at Banksia Hill. Banksia Hill, that was set up in 1997. There's been thousands of kids that have gone through Banksia Hill, and my colleague estimates about 10,000-15,000 kids that have gone through there. And 70% of those children end up in adult carceral estates throughout Western Australia. But in terms of young Cleveland, I will never, never, never forget the hurt and the pain and the looks in these families' eyes. It just shouldn't have happened in that respect. So we launched a mad campaign and we said, no, yous are wrong. And then what actually happened is that somebody had spoken to the ABC, and so we've got some documents, showed ABC the documents. The next day, Paul Papalia, the Minister for Corrective Services, he came out and basically, well, not basically, he admitted and said that they would take full responsibility for the death of Cleveland Dodd. Then, of course, there were so many other moving parts to it, but the reality is Mum's never going to get her boy back. No. And that was the biggest coronial inquest in Western Australia, and it ran over five tranches. But to see the pain and the fails, and even the lying of various prison officers who gave evidence at the Triple C to come to a coronial inquest in the second tranche and basically having to correct his statement, and still no accountability in terms of that. So, you know, you have to ask about the perjury and those type of statements that were made. There's been no accountability, and that's the one thing that we push for right across the country. There has to be an accountability. There has to be someone who's going to be convicted for these negligent matters that are actually occurring and therefore hurting our families and killing our families. So there were times when we said Banksia Hill, Unit 18, and Unit 18 is something that we did not want to open up. We ran mad campaigns and said, do not open that. And what also was given in the coronial inquest, ordinarily when you're planning to do another prison or another section of a prison, it can take up to 3 months. They rushed it through, and I'm talking about Department of Corrective Services and I'm talking about the Minister, where it was done in 4 weeks. Yeah, 4 weeks.
They can move when they want to, yeah. Megan, for the, we have a national audience, and for those who aren't aware, here in Western Australia, I don't know, we, this state covers about 2,600 kilometres from north to south. Massive diversities in communities from place to place, even going a couple of hundred miles up the road. Different protocols, different language groups, different issues facing communities. We have one juvenile detention centre, Banksia Hill Detention Centre in Perth. Unit 18 was opened up, so you have children locked up in a maximum security adult prison, Casuarina Prison. The age of criminal responsibility is 10, just a baby. Kids' minds are still developing. We've seen issues arise previously at Banksia Hill and Unit 18, but in the last week, six young kids aged between just 12 and 17 were on the roof at Banksia Hill Detention Centre. Three of those children have now been sent to Unit 18. The government says, well, we, you know, we're committed, we're going to spend $147 million to fully fund construction of a new youth detention centre. We're going to put it next to Banksia Hill, and what do you know, it'll be ready in 3 years' time. It's not good enough, is it?
No, it isn't. It's absolutely terrible. I mean, the mere fact that they make the announcement on a Friday afternoon in relation to the new youth detention centre. But, you know, 100 beds, 200. The government will put in place these terrible policies, these terrible laws that will see those places being filled. And it's unjustifiable, because the reality is that I've worked in Banksia Hill, and I worked in Banksia Hill along with my colleague Jerry Georgiadis at the time where it was the height of the pandemic. A lot of services weren't there. They rushed us in, and we were working out at Yeeta, and Yeeta is the white compound for the young girls. There was 18 young girls when we went in, and by the time we left 8 weeks later, 7, 8 weeks later, there was only 7. So there's ways forward, but they make it so clinical. They say that these children are really difficult to work with, and the government must stop demonising our children the same way that Mark McGowan, the former Premier of Western Australia, he demonised our children. He said they were bad children. But Mark McGowan, he is no longer the Premier. But we had to run campaigns against him because he tried to make our kids out to be really bad children. Well, let's have a look at the whole of government responsibility. The whole of government responsibility is to fix the poverty. You fix the poverty, you fix the problem. And this is where they seriously lacked on in terms of fixing the poverty. They gave people no hope, no way forwards, let people drown in their trauma, which is so entrenched in our community. And when we have a look at our community throughout Western Australia, we have 274 remote communities. So we had young ones that were coming from Broome, Kununurra, remote communities, all the way down here to Perth. Lack of family supports and so forth. And then if we want to have a look at Banksia Hill in the context of Department of Child Protection, and I mentioned those statistics earlier part, 40% of the children in Banksia Hill are in the care of Department of Child Protection. So it's a double whammy in that respect. So there are definitely ways forward, but until the government actually start hearing from community, and I'm talking about mob, mums, aunties, uncles, nanas, pops and brothers and sisters and so forth, in terms of ways forward, it's not going to get any better anytime soon. And in terms of what happened a couple of days, they're happening all the time.
Yeah.
It's just that this one was reported on, whereas others aren't reported on, but it happens all the time.
My guest is Menang woman Megan Cracker, Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project. Megan, UWA criminologist Hayley Passmore was part of a landmark study and found that 9 out of 10 young people assessed at Banksia Hill had at least one form of severe brain impairment, and agreed that detainees' actions are often motivated by their environment. Your own colleague, Jerry Georgiadis, has been very outspoken on this issue as well, and the solution, according to Jerry and Dr. Passmore and WA's Children's Commissioner Jacqueline McGowan-Jones, is there's the need for more intensive wraparound support which identifies and addresses the root cause of disadvantage and trauma. It's not rocket science, is it?
It isn't rocket science, but I'd go that one step forward. They need to get people that are immersed in that system, who understand the system, people like us, people that ordinarily wouldn't get employed. These are the mob that need to be engaged. It's not just about these wraparound supports, because we've had wraparound supports for years, for decades and so forth. Unless you get the right people, and it's our right people who's in the community that understand the problems, that understand families and so forth, we aren't going to go any way forward anytime soon, and that's the truth of it. There are people across the park at Beaufort where we are at the moment, incredible souls that understand this, understand the young people, because they've been on that journey. But there's these systemic barriers that stop them from getting employment. So, yeah, the wraparound supports is absolutely critical, but unless you get the right people to do the wraparound support that understand and truly immerse in the community, nothing will improve anytime soon. We've had all these status quos in terms of this organisation being funded, that organisation being funded, because people need people, but you need the right people to ensure that we can actually have a huge impact on children trying to self-harm, or children jumping on roofs or climbing the fences. But there has to also be that accountability on the inside, particularly with the prison officers when they do wrong. And that is something that has been invisible for so long. Yes, you have the one or two that get found in court to have perpetuated some kind of hurt or harm to a child. But there are many situations where the children aren't being validated and heard, and that can be done through uncles and aunties that are going out there, not in the ones or two, not in the three or four, but in the multitudes, in the droves, to provide that support during the daytime, but also in the evenings when children feel most alone.
We know through our own work at the Aboriginal Legal Services of WA what some of these kids have been subjected to. Outrageous. Yeah. And, you know, you don't lose your human rights because you're incarcerated, whether you're a child or an adult. But we lodged so many complaints. And I just want to know what you, and you know, and we're talking about things like, you know, children being locked up for 23 out of 24 hours, solitary confinement, horrific, and not getting access to education and all the things that a child needs to grow. And what's your take on what did happen this week with these six young people on the roof, Megan?
They weren't being supported in ways that should. They probably weren't doing any recreational activities. There was no one to help, particularly when there was a distressing phone call with a young person, because you have to be able to regulate and manage those emotions in such a way where there's a positive outlook. In my opinion, that just was not there. And it was not there in the critical moment that actually caused this to happen. Yeah. But like I was saying, this is not an isolated event. There are many of these that happen on a regular basis. They're just not reported on. To stop that type of behaviour, again, make sure that there's lots of Aboriginal visitors workers that are going in and, you know, like the uncles and the aunties, and spreading the love, because people need people, but you need to ensure that there's also that connectivity. You can't just have a black person going in there and working and saying, hey, I'm black and therefore I'm the answer to all your problems. No, you need to have someone who knows community, who knows the lived experience, who in fact may have been lived experience, but someone that connects. But not just a one or two, there needs to be so many. It's very easy to do. It's a very easy concept. But in terms of the government, in terms of Paul Papalia and other people in these relevant positions, they make it more difficult than what it is. They're saying it's not a complex issue, and that's the thing. It is not complex. People need people, and these children are not bad children, but too often they're being demonised to the point where the government give up hope and put in place all these barriers. And one thing that I will say to Minister Paul Papalia, shame on you. Shame on him, because he needs to engage with these children. He needs to understand if he's going to have the portfolio for corrective services, know your cohort, because under his helm, under Roger Cook, we've seen, at Premier Roger Cook, we've seen two young people who have died in Banksia Hill and, of course, Unit 18. First time ever. So they need to understand and also take some responsibility, because these are not bad children. They are just not ensuring that the right processes and the protocols are being put in place. The imprisonment, that is punishment as in itself. What kind of supports can they get whilst they're in there? And this isn't going to cost a lot of money. It's not going to cost a lot of money to the taxpayers whatsoever in the state of Western Australia. People need people. Just go in, help, support. But that connectivity, if you can't connect with a child, if you don't understand who their families are straight away, if you do not understand some of the challenges that that child may have had, mm-hmm. whether it be a grandmother passed last week, an uncle passed it this week, this child's been taken away, this one's sleeping on the streets. If you're not fully immersed in those type of challenges that our young people face, don't even walk into that place, yeah. because you're doing more harm than good.
Is it $1 million it takes to lock up a kid a year?
That's correct.
So money can't be the thing, because there's going to be cheaper solutions than that. And the cheaper solutions is, you know, working with our kids, working with our families before it gets to any worse stage. And I'm, you know, talking about programs like Old Ways, New Ways, yeah. That is run through the Aboriginal Legal Service with Whadjuk Northside Aboriginal Corporation, with Hope Community Services, with the Stephen Michael Foundation. There are so many of our own organisations who are kicking great goals with our kids, with our families, and turning lives around. I don't know why the government isn't following on from that.
Well, it is incumbent on the government, if they want to improve life circumstances, particularly to the cohorts or the constituents of Western Australia, to ensure that they are being accommodated for in terms of needs. But there's some moving beasts, and as a just in relation to this, I mentioned Department of Child Protection. They also need to be taken to task in terms of their children that are in their care. When children are being released and nowhere to go, and then they take off and not being supported in ways that should. So some of these children do have the double whammies of Department of Corrective Services and also the Department of Child Protection. It's about marrying it up, but it has to be through a really lived experience type of narrative, particularly with that connectivity. That is absolutely critical. To say that the government choose to ignore the problems that are happening out at Banksia Hill, hand on heart, that's exactly what they're doing. In terms of ways forward, it's an easy solution. They keep saying, oh, it's complex. Well, I beg to differ, it's not complex. It is not complex at all. Children that have their little hearts hurting, what are their problems? What are their challenges? What's going on? I mean, I've seen children that have given evidence at coronial inquests from a detention centre, and they're sobbing and crying their hearts out because they're reliving the trauma of a young person who has passed away, and they are not even supported by their families in that moment.
You've had some strong messages for the government on our program today, Megan. What's your message to our young people or our men and women who are incarcerated, and also to their families on the outside? Because I think it's important to reassure them as well that these people aren't forgotten. There are so many people in the community that care. There are so many stakeholders that care, that are really trying every day to make a difference in their lives.
In Western Australia, we've gone from 6,500 people locked up in terms of the adult carceral estate to 8,000 people in the prison system. To the children, you are loved, you are respected. Go to school. be good to your nans and your pops, be good to your mums and dads, because one day, as with life, everything comes to pass, including us. While you have beautiful nans and pops in your lives and your mums and dads, embrace, be that good one and go to school, because 50% of our children in Perth area do not go to school. Just know that your life can change and you just have to be determined. If you have some pain, if you've got some grief, some trauma, seek out the right supports and deal with it, because the thing is that in terms of trauma, unaddressed trauma kills unless it's validated. In terms of our brothers and sisters throughout Western Australia that are incarcerated, that does not define you in terms of why you're in there. It's a test of character, and many times us Aboriginal people, we're getting tested from when we're born black, and if you're born a male, you're going to be more racially discriminated against than any other race. But you are powerful, you are loved. Just remember, when things go wrong or things are tough, remember your culture, remember your ancestors, remember your old people and what they fought for. And they did not fight for you to be incarcerated and locked up. Our women need their mans, our mans need their women's, and we need healthy families. So in that respect, all power, all love to everyone in the prison system.
Megan Cracker, thanks for your time on Law Matters, and look forward to our next chat. And remind our listeners that if this interview has raised any issues for you, you can call 13 Yarn 139276. 13 Yarn is run by mob for mob. No judgment, no issue too small. Ring them if you just feel like a yarn. They're there 24/7. 139276. Megan Cracker, Director of the National Suicide Prevention and Trauma Recovery Project, focusing today's program on Banksia Hill Detention Centre, and joining me shortly on the program, Sophie Stewart, who is the Chief Executive of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. Let's have some music. Let's pause and have a little bit of King Stingray. they're awesome, aren't they? King Stingray and Best Bits here on the Law Matters program, proudly brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia every fortnight, and our 15th year on air. Well, nearly the end of our 15th year on air. I don't know where that's gone. But dedicating this program to talking about the youth crisis in Western Australia through Banksia Hill Detention Centre and Unit 18, which is part of the maximum security adult prison at Casuarina in Perth. Enjoyed chatting with Megan Cracker on the program, and Megan works so in depth with our communities and in the justice system in Western Australia that I feel that that's really set the tone and given our national audience an idea of what's actually going on here in the West as well. Sometimes we call it the Wicked West, and you know, when you see that, you know, children as young as 10 are being locked up and incarcerated and housed within an maximum security adult prison, it's just outrageous. And to join us on the program now is Sophie Stewart. Sophie is the CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. Sophie, thanks for your time on Law Matters. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm all right. Thank you so much for having me, Jodie.
For the benefit of our listeners, what is Social Reinvestment WA? What do you do?
So Social Reinvestment WA, we are a coalition that's been operating for more than a decade now, all committed to the joint cause of ending the over-criminalisation of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in WA's justice system. We're our organisation, we're small, but we operate statewide, and we've got proud to be led by an Aboriginal majority board, but our member organisations are non-for-profits from all walks of life who all have vast experiences in working with people at the pointy end of justice system, but also earlier on in the system too.
We've had two young people die in custody in Western Australia. Absolutely shameful. The first was a young 16-year-old Aboriginal boy, Master Dodd, and then followed closely by another young fella. Two tragedies that should never, ever had occurred. The youth justice system in WA is in crisis, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that the youth justice system has been in crisis for quite a long time. And it really became heightened in 2021, and obviously I think culminated in the awful, awful death of two children and young people in the care of state government institutions, which can never be allowed to happen again.
The government has responded by saying that they've committed $147 million to fully fund construction of a new youth detention facility in Perth. It will be built alongside Banksia Hill Detention Centre in Perth. It will replace Unit 18 that is currently housed in the adult maximum security prison in Perth. $147 million, and it's going to take 3 years to do. That's unacceptable, isn't it?
I think there's really two major issues with that, Jodie. You know, number one, I can't help but think that the government announcement on Friday was really clearly preempting the coroner's findings, which we know will be coming out imminently. And we're actually expecting that to come out on the 8th of December. Yeah. And the coroner, who has been looking into the death of 16-year-old Pleasant Dodge, we know we'll call for the immediate and urgent closure of Unit 18. And the key word here is immediate. So there's not much, I'd say, that the Greens, the Liberal Party, the coroner and Social Reinvestment WA all agree on. But one thing we do all agree on is that Unit 18 has to be closed urgently. We cannot wait until 2028. We cannot leave Western Australian children and young people to languish in a maximum security adult prison for any more years, months or days. And I think that closing Unit 18 urgently and immediately is the only way that we're going to immediately reduce the risk to children's lives, that we're going to reduce the overcrowding in the adult prisons, you know, by freeing up those 128 beds, which will help alleviate, you know, some pretty terrible conditions, particularly in Hague here at the moment. It's the only way we can act consistently with international law, and I think it's the only way for the WA government to demonstrate a serious commitment to meeting communities' expectations that no more young people will die in the custody of government institutions that are supposed to be rehabilitating them. And I think when we consider the new facility that's been announced, what's clear is that I think the WA Labor government wants to wait until that new facility is online before they close Unit 18. Mm. But really, we can't wait for that. And Unit 18 was opened way back in 2021 in less than a month. I think we can close it in that amount of time too, especially with the infrastructure upgrades that have happened at Bankshire Hill over the last couple of years.
My guest is Sophie Stewart from Social Reinvestment WA. Sophie, they're spending $147 million. Well, it costs about $1 million every year to detain a child in detention. The focus needs to be on more avoiding these kids getting caught up in the justice system as well, because we know once they're in it, it's just a treadmill from going from youth detention to adult prison. It's absolutely horrific. There's so much good work that money can be doing, working with families on the outside and providing that wraparound service. And you know, for a start, let's raise the age of criminal responsibility anyway. The fact that a 10-year-old can be locked up in this state is just deplorable. What did you see as the solution in working with our young people?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're 100% right, Jodie. $147 million to build a new facility plus that $1 million a year. And $1 million a year per child, which we know could send each of these kids to the most expensive Swiss private boarding school. In fact, it could do that over. So I can't help but think about how much more good $147 million could do in the communities that are the most impacted by youth justice issues. You know, in Kununurra right now, what could they do with a big portion of that money to help young people? So I think when we consider how do we make communities safer and build better futures for young people. And we are talking about young people who are the most disadvantaged, who are the most left behind, who have slipped through the cracks of social safety nets that are supposed to catch them. And I think a few things. Firstly, we've really got to reinvest earlier upstream. And that's you know, things like crisis housing for young people who are on the streets at night and haven't got somewhere safe to sleep. It's residential mental health and alcohol and drug rehabilitation facilities, particularly in the regions where they just don't have access to these things. It's training and alternative schooling for kids who just don't fit in with the mainstream. All of that would be a better spend of money and pay dividends actually for the whole community. I want to give you an example from overseas because, you know, in Spain, they've got a model called the Diagrama model, and 87% of the children and young people, the kids who go through it, do not re-offend. 87% who go through it. The Diagrama model costs just $125,000 a year.
Wow.
And, you know, Western Australians, we deserve a world-class youth justice system too. High security prisons for kids is just not going to achieve this. And I've worked in the youth justice space for over, you know, in justice reform for over a decade, including internationally. And I'm not aware of any place around the world where creating more hardened high security prisons for children as young as 10 has actually helped communities to be safer long term or to really truly rehabilitate young people who need that support. So we're really moving in the wrong direction, I think, with where we're focusing here.
What's your take, Sophie Stewart, on the footage we saw in the media this week of six young people on the roof at Banksia Hill Detention Centre, three of whom have now been moved to the infamous Unit 18? How do you feel when you see that? I mean, Megan Cracker said, look, this is going on all the time. It's just that the media's caught this one. But there's a real cry for help, isn't there?
Yeah, look, and I'd agree with Megan. It's really interesting to me that this happened to leak to the media on Monday because I think that incidents happen inside Banksia Hill fairly regularly and are dealt with fairly regularly by professionals there. It's not uncommon for teenage boys and especially teenage boys who, you know, are going through a whole lot of stuff to, you know, climb on a roof. Most of the time kids come down when they get hungry, when they get cold, when they calm down. And we saw that's, you know, what happened as well on Tuesday morning. It's really lucky that no one was harmed and that none of the children were harmed and that none of the staff were, you know, harmed in that incident. But I think the key thing to understand is that prisons and ultimately any prison is really not the space to be best meeting the unmet needs of young people. And if we look at approaches that work around the world, It's a needs, not deeds-based approach. And that's what they've done in Scotland in the last 10 years, which has radically transformed their justice system. They no longer have a single person under the age of 18 in prison in Scotland. And they've managed to achieve that by focusing on the needs of young people. And those needs are different for each young person. So, you know, one young person, what they might need is to get into, to really get their hands into a trade or into some farming skills. Maybe they need to be doing something physical. They've got a lot of energy to burn. They need to be out and they need a lot of support and, you know, some rules and responsibility around that to help them to kind of, you know, be able to use up all the energy and do that. Another kid might really be going through significant mental health struggles and mental health crisis, and they might have experienced a lot of trauma. And those two young people might have very, very different support and rehabilitation needs. At the moment, we send all those kids to prison and we don't necessarily tailor the support needs that are required for all of those young people. So, of course, we're not getting the outcomes. I think the number one thing to think about, you know, 18 too, beyond Bankshire Hill, because Bankshire Hill is a little bit better at, offering different things, but Unit 18 can never and will never be humane or fit for purpose for rehabilitating children and young people. And it's for a very simple reason. The only thing that makes any prison slightly humane is that you're not just kept in your cell in your unit. You have access to the library, you have access to the workshop, you have access to the recreation centre, to the gym, to the oval, to different spaces, and you have access to all of those things. But for the safety of children who are held in a maximum security adults men's prison, they are confined to that small, small unit. And I've been there. It's really small and it's got two tiny yards. Children being detained there never will have access to any of the things and the resources and the facilities that are going to help them. So, you know, you can't dress up Unit 18 and make it work. It's never going to work. We need to have purpose-built spaces and a lot of them in the community where we can actually meet the needs of these young people.
What's your message to government? 3 years to complete the replacement Unit 18. What's your message to them, Sophie Stewart?
We cannot afford to wait until 2028 to close Unit 18. The WA community expects and demands better of the government who represents us in taking care of children and young people in state-run institutions and custody. So, you know, if you could open Unit 18 within a month, you know, use your resources, use the infrastructure, use the people you have employed to get that place closed as soon as possible and implement all of the coroner's recommendations when they come out, because the coroner is the WA people and government's own institution for determining what should happen. So we need to implement those coroner's recommendations in full. We can never, ever have another Cleveland Dodd. We can never, ever have another child die in custody in WA.
And those recommendations from the coroner will be out on the 8th of December, is that right?
Yes, that's what we're expecting and anticipating.
So we'll bring you more information here on Law Matters. Sophie Stewart, thanks as always for your time and all the best to you and the team doing a great job.
Thank you so much, Jodie.
Sophie Stewart, CEO of Social Reinvestment Western Australia. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. Time ticking away, but before we do finish up our program today, I do want to bring some important information to our listeners about the WA Stolen Generations Redress Scheme. I'm going to give you the contact numbers of organisations who can help you through that application process if you would like that help, but also going to be letting you know about some scams. Yes, there are scammers out there. We do not want you to get scammed, so I'll be giving you some important tips on how to avoid that. Let's have a listen to Clint Bracknell and a song called Valentina.
Well, I pulled in about an hour ago. It was a long drive down a dusty road. Motor died three times on the way from Mount Alina. Tonight, you're my Valentina. Tonight, you're my Valentina.
pair of eyes, a new pair of shoes. Tried to look surprised when I seen you. Tonight, you're my Valentina. Tonight, you're my Valentina. Simple man, I got no moves, no grace, no plan. You're the lioness, I'm the lamb, but I've never been keener. Tonight, you're my Valentina. Tonight, you're my Valentina. Tonight, you're my, my Valentina.
He's a talented bloke, Clint Bracknell, and my Valentina. This is the Law Matters program brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. A couple of weeks ago, the WA Stolen Generations Redress Scheme was officially opened. It's available to Aboriginal people who were removed from their families as children in Western Australia before the 1st of July 1972. Eligible applicants will receive a payment of $85,000 and, if they wish, a personal acknowledgement. And the scheme recognises the enduring impacts of past child removal policies in Western Australia, and the scheme is being coordinated by the Department of the Premier and Cabinet. But with most schemes, you have to beware of scammers. So if you are thinking of applying to the WA Stolen Generations Redress Scheme, you could become a target from people who might pretend to help you get the money when what they really want to do is steal it from you. So be extra, extra cautious. They might also say that they're from a law firm or a government department. So here's the advice you need to do to keep safe. Be suspicious of anyone who contacts you via social media or unexpectedly on phone or text, offering to help you get your money quicker if you pay a fee. You will never have to pay money to receive your redress money. You do not need to pay a support service or a law firm to help you apply. Don't share your personal details with people that you don't know. And if anyone contacts you saying that they are from the government, hang up and call the scheme operations team at the Department of the Premier and Cabinet to check if that call was actually real. Their number in Perth is 08 6552 5050. And if you're unsure, speak with some family members or somebody that you trust. And if you think that you've been contacted by a scammer or paid money to a scammer, you can call WA, the ScamNet team, on 1300 30 40 54. WA ScamNet, 1300 30 40 54. And just a reminder that you can go to the website of the Department of Premier and Cabinet, fill in all your own details, do the application on your own. If you feel that you would like to be supported throughout that process, there are organisations that can assist you in that process as well. In Perth, you've got Yokai, Healing Our Spirit, 6288 8123. You've got Yorgum Healing Services, 1800 469 371. And you've also got, in the Kimberley region, the Kimberley Stolen Generation Aboriginal Corporation, and they've got a free call number, 1800 830 338. All of that information that I've just given you is on the website of the Department of the Premier and Cabinet. So just wanted to give you that important advice so that you don't find yourself being scammed. Thanks for your company on Law Matters. Look forward to it again in a fortnight's time from myself, Jodie Hoffman. Until then, take care. Thank you to my guests, Megan Cracker and Sophie Stewart. Look after each other.